Harvey Firestone helped invent the American highway road system. So, it's only fitting that Firestone Complete Auto Care would have our epic sales event in the heart of the road trip season. From June 6th to 9th, you can stop by your local Firestone for up to $100 off select services, so you can get going on your next adventure. Limited time offer, conditions apply. Go to FirestoneComplete.com for details.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Welcome to episode 7 of the Views from 314 Feet podcast on the Picture List Podcast Network. I finally got that right. I'm very proud of myself. It only took me 37 times to practice that. It's Randy Wilkins. I'm joined by Yankees beat reporter from The Athletic, Chris Kirshner. Chris, how are you?
Doing well. Just got in from Yankee Stadium after Monday's bizarre Yankees game, so I'm sure we'll get into that very quickly.
Yeah, we decided to record after the game just for scheduling reasons, and also worked out just because that game was, as you said, bizarre and just bizarre on a lot of levels, not just the horrific umpire decision that we will get into in a couple minutes. But were you at the stadium this weekend for the Rays series?
Yeah, I was there. Not much happened in that series, I feel like, too.
Well, Friday night was good. The Soto
Friday was crazy. I mean, I've been covering the team since August 2022. I mean, that was one of the loudest moments I've heard in the past 2 years now. It was electric. It was incredible. Like, you could feel, like, the press box shaking a little bit just of how loud the stadium was. And I mean, we've talked about it on numerous episodes now, but the fan base has, I mean, fallen completely in love with Soto and just everything about him, the way he's embraced the fans. You know, he's signing autographs, you know, I think a couple of weeks ago, like right before first pitch.
Right.
Just everything about him has been, I think, even better than anybody could have expected.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's been, I mean, he's checked every box, 10 out of 10 across the board. I'm happy that the fan base is happy with him, because speaking of fan bases, I'm just going to take a very quick non sequitur. We talked about this before we got on, so I've already warned you. My weekend was pretty good. There was a stretch of time, though, Sunday, yesterday, from 10:30 to like 1:30. Where I was watching the Manchester United Coventry City FA Cup semifinal. So I'm a United fan because of Ronaldo back in the day. So I just jumped on the bandwagon. And I have never, ever in my life experienced what I experienced yesterday as a sports fan, collectively with other fans, than what happened yesterday. So I'll go through this quickly because nobody wants to hear about soccer on a Yankees podcast outside of a couple United fans that are also Yankees fans. So the FA Cup is essentially the domestic cup championship or tournament. So it's like they're very highly regarded, like playing tournament. I'm trying to give an example where people that don't watch soccer understand what it is. But it's a big deal. You know, Manchester City won that as part of their treble last year, whatever. Manchester City sucks, by the way. And this is a semifinal. United's playing Coventry City, who's on the championship side, which basically means, for lack of a better reference, they're a triple A team playing a Major League Baseball team to get to the finals for this cup. And Manchester United, as you would expect, is killing Coventry City for 70 minutes. It's 3-0. In soccer, that's generally game over. Of course, in pure Manchester United style, it's 3-3 at the end. And you're just like, what the hell is going on? It was the the grossest, most ridiculous exhibition of incompetence from a manager and a group of players collectively that I've ever seen in such a short amount of time. Like, the manager lost his mind with his decisions and the players forgot how to play. There's no other way to describe it. So they go to extra time. United basically lose because Coventry City scores again, but it gets called back for offside. So, like, they get saved by VAR, which is an assistant referee that looks at video to determine if a play is legal or not. Long story short, Manchester United ends up winning the game. Now, this is a part that I've never experienced before. Every single United fan, including myself, just completely dumps on Manchester United and just floods their social media and like each other's accounts and like just go nuts saying you are the most undeserving finalists in the history of sports. And it was like 100% agreed upon by every fan. Like, I've never been in a situation where my team won and everybody's convinced that the manager should be fired. Like, it became a tipping point for his tenure, and you don't deserve to be in a position to win the championship. It was kind of like, or the cup. It was kind of like how people or Yankees fans look at the 2022 season with the ALCS. Like, you shouldn't have been in the ALCS. Like, that season was totally worthless because you got swept against the Astros and it doesn't even count. It was kind of like that times a million. I've never experienced something like that as a fan before. It was crazy. It was crazy.
I mean, was the outrage worse than a 2-0 loss to the Oakland A's on April 22nd? Because, I mean, the outrage today was pretty bad.
It actually was worse. I mean, because there's some Yankees fans that will watch this game against the A's, and now we can transition to the Yankees, and say, okay, it's one game, it's baseball, it's April, like all the like obvious caveats. The United thing was like, you guys suck. Like, you stink, and you should. I'm trying not to curse because I would definitely go off right now. Comparable with the 2-0 loss, but like yesterday was worse because it was unequivocally agreed upon by every single person involved that they didn't deserve it, and they let the club know. It was hilarious. It was crazy. So that's my little non sequitur rant or recap for the podcast.
That rant was a lot calmer than Aaron Boone's rant to Hunter Wendelstadt today after getting ejected two batters into the game.
I mean, his was quieter than mine because he didn't say anything. So
he didn't say one word.
He didn't say one word. So let's just get into the most bizarre moment in the game today against Oakland. I'm sure by the time that you hear this, you'll be very aware of what happened. You'll know the circumstances. You would have seen the video, and you would have seen Hunter Wendelstadt's reaction or response to everything that happened. But for those that might not know, Aaron Boone was ejected about 5 or 6 pitches into the game. It was Ruiz, right? Asturi, yeah. Ruiz.
Yep, he got hit on his back foot. Boone initially thought that he swung. So, if you know, even if you get hit, you can get hit in the head. But if you swing, you know, it's still a strike. So that was initially what Boone and the Yankees dugout was complaining about.
Right. And then Boone said his piece to the first base umpire, and the home plate umpire, Hunter Wendelstadt, responded, in Boone's estimation, aggressively.
Yes.
And according to Boone, he didn't have an issue with the home plate umpire, and he was simply asking, was it a swing to the first base umpire? And apparently Hunter Wendelstadt took exception to even Boone trying to figure out what was going on with the swing. So that is the context for what happens next. Now, we see in the Yes broadcast that there's a fan that's in the legend seats in the first row, who is pretty much right above Boone, screams something at the umpire, which even then, nobody's talked about it. If you can lip read, he's not even saying anything crazy. He's like, let's go or get it to, you know, something that's like mundane when you're generally yelling at somebody. And Wendell Sack clearly had rabbit ears, immediately ejects Aaron Boone. Aaron Boone has an amazing reaction of like shock and surprise. And then everything kind of like goes downhill from there. But it is one of the more ridiculous things I've ever seen on a baseball field. And certainly one of the most, I think, is unprofessional. And I'll explain why in a minute or two. But I think it's a wildly unprofessional response, especially, and this is another detail, when Hunter Wendelstadt said, I don't care who said it, you're gone. And the actual decision plus that statement to me is wildly unprofessional, in my opinion. I don't know what you think about it, but I think it's really embarrassing. And without trying to sound overly dramatic, I think it's a bad look for the league in general.
100% bad look. I mean, it's an egregious decision to eject someone for nothing. Like, Boone is ejected for nothing. I mean, when Hunter was asked after the game, you know, he said that he heard a cheap shot from the Yankees dugout, but on the far end of the Yankees dugout, which he might have the best ears in the world, because I don't know how the hell anybody could hear the far end of the dugout when Boone is on the other far end of the dugout. It makes no sense to me. I mean, because if you watch the video, and shout out to the YES Network cameras and audio team, they did a hell of a job just capturing all this, because they made it clear as day that, you know, Boone didn't do anything, and obviously Hunter Wendelstadt messed up. But Hunter's, you know, I mean, ridiculous response after the game was that it came on the far end of the dugout. Boone's in charge of the dugout, so whatever happens in the dugout, it ultimately falls on Boone because he's the manager. I mean, it's just another awful look for the umpires. They have no accountability ever. Nothing is ever their fault. I mean, we can even go into Angel Hernandez. Like, that guy should not have a job in Major League Baseball anymore. I'm not advocating for like anybody to lose their jobs, but we're talking about professional sports here. And how many years has it been of Angel Hernandez being by far the worst umpire in the sport? It's an embarrassment. Today was an embarrassment. I mean, it's absurd that you can tell a manager that you're ejected and I don't care if you said it or not. I mean, this isn't T-ball. This is a job that, you know, should be at the top of your game, whether you're an umpire, whether you're a player, whether you're a coach. And to just flat out say, like, you don't care where it came from, I mean, that is totally and wildly unprofessional. And I'm curious to see if Major League Baseball issues a response. The umpires union, they're not going to say a damn word. They're going to stick by Hunter Wendelstadt, which is fine. That's their job. But my God, can we have some accountability for umpires once? It's so ridiculous. And then even in the game on, when did Luis Gil pitch? Saturday? When the first balk, when Caballero scored. I mean, the umpires like getting in front of the plate, like dramatically pointing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, what the hell? Like, no one is paying to see umpires do this stuff, and they do it all the damn time, and it's absurd.
Yeah. Well, before we get more into like the emotional side of this, because we feel exactly the same way, and if anyone follows me on Twitter, they know how much I hate officials in professional sports. I have no respect for them. Like, I'll just flat out say it. I don't have any respect for referees, officials, umpires. I could care less for them. Not as human beings, I respect them, their profession and their performance. I don't respect them. But before we get more into that aspect of it, can you explain the process of what happens when an umpire speaks to a pool reporter after the game? Because one important piece of context for Wendelstadt's comments is that he had yet to see the video before he spoke to the pool reporter. So he's answering those questions off of memory more so than what actually happened. And I think it's important to at least be fair to him when we're discussing his quotes, that he had yet to see the video. But even then, let us know about the process and why even that part of the story is egregious on his part.
Yeah, so he said that he didn't see a replay before talking to the pool reporter. The pool reporter today was the AP's Larry Fleischer. So, you know, during the game, you know, reporters can request talking to an umpire. It's only one reporter. The pool reporter is just one person. So it's not like a group of, it's not the the entire Yankees beat is going into the umpire's room, you know, trying to ask what happened. It's just one guy. So we request the pool reporter. Larry goes down after the game. There's a buffer time. So, and also the Hunter knows that he's going to be spoken to after the game and interviewed. So there is time to actually like watch a replay. I haven't done this before with the MLB, but when I was covering the NBA, I was pool reporter several times, and usually the NBA referee will look at the play that he knows is going to be asked about. Say it's, you know, it's a technical foul or something, or a close call late in the game, whatever. They'll look at the replay and usually they'll say, I messed up, or that was the correct call. This is why what this happened. In this instance, you know, Hunter could have had time to look at the replay. He didn't look at the replay, which in my opinion makes this worse just because of the process. Again, there is some time for him to watch the replay if he chose to. He obviously didn't look at the replay to see that when he ultimately ejected Boone, it's the exact same time that fan in the blue sweater yells whatever he yelled, and we still don't know what he said exactly. But again, a shout out to the Yes Network, because they got that camera angle right at the exact time Hunter throws Boone out, because it comes right after that fan in the blue screamed whatever he screamed. So that part of Hunter's remarks were crazy to me, in my opinion, because it's like, one, there's so many camera angles out there, and we had very clear audio of what exactly happened. And for him to not take a minute before, you know, Larry goes down there to talk to him is completely crazy to me, because you know that this story is huge. You have to know. I mean, like, anyone with a brain knows that, one, it's the New York Yankees, two, you know, Boone has a history with umpires, so that's also going to be something that's mentioned throughout the game and then after the game. And obviously Boone was asked about his history with umpires. You know, he has the most ejections since taking over the managerial job. He decided to do none of that, and that's why, like, it's so absurd to me that there is zero accountability with these umpires, because Hunter's just going to, you know, go on and do his job tomorrow like nothing happened and not face any sort of consequence for such an egregious error on his behalf. So that's where I'm at.
So I want to add to that, and because I don't want to echo, I fully agree with you. I don't want to echo that sentiment, because I think you covered that really well. Another reason why I just don't respect officials in professional sports leagues, and it becomes a little bit more simpler for me. There are professionals that are trained at their jobs that almost never reflect that training in their game-to-game performance. And it bothers me. I'm trained to be a filmmaker. I'm a good filmmaker. The expectation from an audience when they watch something that I make is to have something that's professionally competent and done as well as possible. People want to be entertained. They want to learn. They want to get insight. All of those things. That's my responsibility as a professional filmmaker. That is my job. when you write your pieces for The Athletic, people have expectations for what your work is going to look like, what it's going to be written like, the insight. They're leaning on you to get information, to be educated, all those things. You do that at a high level. I do my job at a high level. And it's consistent. When you look at, and this is true for construction workers, for doctors, any professional in any industry that is trained, the expectation from a customer, anyone, is that you do your job consistently at a high level. That is your responsibility as an employee. It doesn't matter if you're flipping burgers, if you're building a building, if you're a professional baseball league umpire. And there are too many instances when Major League Baseball umpires are just performing at a subpar level with consistency. And all you're asking is that umpires meet the expectations of their jobs. If we're watching Aaron Judge, everybody's killing Aaron Judge because he's not meeting the expectations of his job. That's ultimately why people get mad. And that's why it's such a fickle thing. You have an expectation for a very well-paid professional athlete, and you believe that when that athlete goes out to perform, he or she performs at their highest level with consistency. Same thing with the manager. That's why people get mad at the manager, because when they view the decisions or the performance, you're saying you're not meeting the expectations that come along with your job. Umpires are not allowed to be outside of those expectations. And that is ultimately my issue with umpires and officials in professional sports leagues. They almost never meet those performance expectations. There are so many instances where they just make these egregious calls. They do these rash emotional things like Wendelstad did today. And not only does it ruin the competition, it also brings attention on them for all the wrong reasons. We shouldn't be aware that you're there. And it's not like if I'm behind the plate calling a Major League Baseball game, I'm going to F up. I don't know what I'm doing. I've never seen like a 96 mile per hour slider from a righty that's on like the third base side cut across the plate. I've never had that perspective before as an umpire. So if I'm there, I'm not trained. I'm going to suck. That's my expectation, and that's everybody's expectation. But you're actually trained. You've been an umpire for 20 years, and you are a recipient or benefactor of nepotism. So you've been an umpire basically your entire life. You understand Hunter Wendelstad, what it means to be an umpire on the major league level. You're a Nepo baby, essentially, and you've had this job for 20 years. You have these bloodlines. You know how to be an umpire, and yet we deal with stuff like this all the time. And it's with him specifically also. He's not a good umpire. So, like, that's the thing that bothers me. It's just, like, a very simple expectation for professionals. Be a professional. If I'm expecting the players to play at a certain level and the manager to manage at a certain level on both sides, not just the Yankees, but the A's. You expect a professional level game of baseball. The umpires have to do that too. And it like never happens. I hate them. I'm sorry. I hate them.
Yeah. I mean, it's bad. And like we didn't even talk about how poor the strike zone was today.
Terrible.
My
terrible.
God. I mean, there were several numerous calls that were just way off the plate. On both sides, too.
Both sides.
So it's not like one fan base can complain over the other. Like, it was both sides. It was egregious. I think Carlos had one. I forget who was up for Oakland. But it was like 6 or 7 inches off the plate. I mean, it wasn't even close to a strike. It's all the time. I feel like it's every game, and I feel like the umpiring is getting worse. I mean,
it is.
They have to – I don't know what they can do. I don't know how close they are to implementing the challenge system. I highly doubt that they'll ever go to full robots,
right.
because of the union. But my God, they have to have something in place to fix this. It takes away from the product on the field. I mean, we're spending now 20 plus minutes on talking about umpiring. I mean, is that good for baseball? No, it's horrible for baseball. It's horrible.
And at some point, we can talk about this and then move on to the actual baseball and Yankee stuff. But at some point, there needs to be an adjustment on the level of accountability and public accountability. I think that's also the other issue here, is because every single person that follows this league knows that there won't be any public accountability for what we saw today. And this is not a Yankee thing. It's like a Major League Baseball thing. And there's no assurance that this can't happen to another team and another team's fan base at any moment. And there's nothing to reel Hunter Wendelstedt back. So who's to say he doesn't do that again to some other team in some other game? You know, there are no repercussions. There are no consequences for it. So at the very least, MLB should reconsider and forcefully go to the union and say, look, we need to have public accountability measures here to avoid this. This is ridiculous. Like, this is embarrassing. It's not good for us. And at some point, there need to be consequences. So at least we know as a public that something could happen. And I know everything that I just said is not going to happen, which is the problem. It's not going to happen.
No, it's not, because it would have happened many years ago. Again, like I was saying with Angel Hernandez, every time he's behind the plate, it's news because of how terrible he is. And he's thrown out plenty of people over the years arguing, you know, balls and strikes. Is anything ever going to happen? No, nothing. Yeah. So this is just another incident where, you know, the games will be played tonight, the games will be played tomorrow, and Major League Baseball will move on.
I know it's bad when Susan Waldman is like beside herself on the broadcast.
I didn't listen to her.
She was not happy. She was like one of us. And like, she doesn't like Angel Hernandez. Like, she lets you know right away that Angel's behind the plate and that's going to be a rough day. So Susan's one of us in many ways, but that's one of my barometers to justify or validate how I'm feeling about an umpire that day. If Susan has had enough and kind of huffs and puffs on the air when there's some bad calls going on. So, all right, we finished our umpire rant, hopefully for the season. And when we come back from this break, we'll discuss how the Yankees should probably feel fortunate that Hunter Wendelstedt was one of the main talking points, because that offense, woo boy. We'll talk about it after the break. So, as we mentioned, Hunter Wendelstedt might have done the Yankees a favor today in this game against the Oakland A's, because he kind of covers for this putrid offensive performance from the Yankees, which is beginning to become a slightly concerning trend, in the sense that this is their fourth game where they've been shut out, and it's April 22nd. And I want to preface this by saying, I think ultimately the Yankees offense will be really good. Chris, I think you feel the same way. We've said this in other episodes. But with that said, we are not going to like sugarcoat this and pretend as if what we're seeing is like imaginary and we're the only two people that can see through the nonsense. The offense is terrible right now. It's like an offensive offense. And yeah, today was another example of that. It's just really bad offensive baseball.
Yeah, it's not good. I'm looking now. The Yankees right now are 21st in slugging. The Colorado Rockies are slugging at a better clip than the New York Yankees. I mean that's bad. When you look at the just construction of the offense as a whole, the Yankees, they're built to mash. They have Giancarlo Stanton. They have Aaron Judge. They have Anthony Rizzo, Juan Soto, Gleyber Torres. Up and down the order, they have guys who should be driving the ball, and they're just not. And that's part of the problem. I tweeted it out during the game. But since that final game in Toronto where they had that crazy ninth inning and they ended up winning that game, Yankees not named Juan Soto have zero extra base hits. That's any team, like, to go 4 or 5 games with just one player, like, really carrying the offense, that's a lot of games. And especially, like, this early in the season where the sample size, you know, 4 or 5 games, that's 20% of the season so far.
Right.
That's not good. That's really not good. And, you know, Oakland's a bad team, but they haven't been, like, completely horrid like the Chicago White Sox. Like, they're just, like, the A's right now are regular bad. The White Sox are horrifically and historically bad.
Yeah.
So I do want to say that, like, we're not dealing with, like, an Oakland team that is just, you know, on pace to be the worst team ever. Like, they're not terrible, but they're also just not a good team. So the Yankees, like, they have no excuse of putting up 3 hits against the A's. They have zero excuse for that. And just the at-bats in total in Monday's game, not good, just not very good. And that's really what's been the trend in a lot of these games. Like, you know, if you take out Soto, what he's done for these first 23 games, and Volpe for, I don't know if we're going to get into Volpe, but Volpe hasn't looked good for like a week and a half now. But if you take away Volpe's like start at the beginning of the season, this offense would be horrific. Like, we're talking, yeah, you know, last season levels. So, I think they'll be fine in the long run, but it is concerning. I mean, they have 4 shutouts in their first 23 games. I'm looking at it now from what Katie Sharp tweeted out. This is the 8th time in franchise history the Yankees have been shut out 4-plus times in their first 23 games of the season. The last time was in 1984. So it's been a while that the Yankees just go lifeless in this amount of games. So I'm curious to get your take, because I know you tweeted out that, you know, you think they're going to be fine. But I think they're the fans' concerns about the state of the offense, I think, are warranted right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree. I mean, I don't begrudge anyone that's criticizing them. I mean, I'm with them. So I don't, when I say I think they're going to be fine, that's not dismissing what we're seeing. I mean, the offense is bad. I mean, there's no way around it. There's no way to try to work your way around it. It's just, it's a really bad offense right now. And there are a lot of guys that are just not performing at the level, even the like baseline level for a lot of their careers. It's funny. You mentioned Oakland. I'm not sure that the Yankees are going to fix their offensive problems against this staff. Oakland's pitched pretty well so far.
Yeah, I mean, they faced Paul Blackburn in Tuesday's game, and Blackburn's has been one of the better pitchers across MLB. So, you know, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, don't be surprised that the Yankees also struggle in Tuesday night's game against Blackburn, because he has pitched well. So just a caution for all of you who may be freaking out later tonight.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that the reason why the A's have 9 wins so far is because of their pitching and certainly their bullpen. I mean, Mason Miller is filthy. He was filthy before today, but I think because it was an early game, the only game that was on, and who he faced in the ninth, he like really just made a statement in very short fashion and just said, look, I'm here. You're not hitting this. And he had this like look on his face like, yeah, I'm gonna strike these guys out. They have no shot against me. So Oakland is a good pitching team so far, and they don't really give up a lot of slug. So I'm not sure that this is the series where the Yankees are going to find that magic potion to start hitting the ball all over the stadium. So again, like you said, this we might want to temper expectations for this offense because we have to give some credit to Oakland. They can pitch. J.P. Sears is a good pitcher. And I know the Yankees had to give us some talent to get Frankie Montas, and we know how that worked out. But J.P. Sears is good, and Blackburn is even better. So the Yankees have their work cut out for them. And I don't even think there's one thing that you can put your finger on with the Yankees right now. I think some guys, it's mechanical. Like, I think at this point with Judge, he's a mess mechanically. Like, his front hip is leaking. I'm not a hitting coach, but there's certain things you can identify right away if you've watched the game enough and played enough. He can't get to anything on the outside part of the plate. He just looks a mess mechanically, and he's in between. He's like all those like baseball cliches. Gleyber, I think I thought he was pressing before, and now I think it's just deteriorated into mechanical stuff as well, and like just approach at the plate. Rizzo still looks like he's playing underwater. Cabrera is starting to cool down a little bit. Volpe, to me, Volpe had like a very extreme course correct coming, and I think he'll balance out as time goes on. But the crash is pretty like rough to watch right now. And it also feel the one thing I am concerned about with Volpe is that it feels like his bat path is kind of leaning back to what it looked like last year. Like there were some at bats that he's had where it feels like it's that steep kind of uppercut plane thing that he had last year. And that was the one kind of thing that I've seen where I'm like, I hope that doesn't happen again.
Let me throw out a stat to you. Since that game in Arizona where he, you know, went crazy, I had four hits. Volpe is hitting .227, .292 on base, .288 slugging, and a 75 WRC plus. That's 74 plate appearances now where he's been below average. And that's the second series of the season. You know, it's been a while, because I mean he went nuclear that against Houston, right? You know, the first couple games against Arizona. Like he's had some good games for sure. You know, he went 3-for-5 against Cleveland, 2-for-5. You know, he had a 3-for-4 game against Toronto. So that's included all those. So for basically now all of April, outside of April 1st, April 2nd and April 21st, April 22nd, he's been a below average major league hitter. So I know there's still a lot of Volpe love out there for sure. And I do think that, you know, like you said, he was due for a course correction just because like he was hitting at Barry Bonds levels. Right. He's not going to be Barry Bonds. So like there was definitely, you know, a reason to think like, okay, he's going to come crashing down to earth. But, you know, like I said, from April 2nd on, that's 20 days now, he hasn't been an above average major league hitter.
Yeah, I mean, I'll stick by my prediction. It's just not looking good at the moment with Volpe. But I wonder, is there anything that's public where you can kind of see players like bat paths? Because I know, so there's I think they're still around, but there's a company called Diamond Kinetics. I don't want to like give them free promotion, but this is like for the purpose of what's going on or what I'm trying to say here. And they have a product where you have an app with, you know, that goes along with it, and it kind of measures, or it doesn't measure, it visually captures hitters' bat paths and gives like, you know, exit velocity and barrel velocity, all these like metrics. And I'm really curious. I know that like numbers and baseball savants, Statcast, and all that stuff is like really important, and they're great tools. The one thing that I wish we could see on a consistent basis is things like, or are things like what this company does for hitters when they're training, to just see, you know, are there changes in approach angle you know, with the barrel as an example, because I think when I look at Volpe, I see a difference, but I'm not totally sure if that's accurate or not. And these measurements and these visual captures allow us to see that, because I feel like part of what's going on now, he's kind of slipping into old habits, swing wise. And he's also starting to chase a little bit more, it feels like, as well. He's expanding the strike zone a little bit. But I would love to see, and I'm pretty sure it's not available for like major leaguers, and I think it's for obvious reasons. But I would love to see that, especially with Volpe, because especially today, there were a couple of pitches that he swung at where I just felt like that looks like last year. But I'm not totally sure if that's what's going on or it just happened to be one swing or two. So I don't, you know, it might be something to look out for.
Yeah, there's a company called Swing Graphs that it's behind a paywall, but they have proprietary information about player swing path. I used it for an article I used in spring training when Volpe mentioned that, you know, he was trying to change his bat path. But I think they update their site every month, so there's nothing currently available for this season. But you know, maybe in a week or so, they'll have information of just like how different his bat path is.
Yeah, I'm like kind of a hitting nerd, just the mechanics of it and all the stuff that goes into it. So I'm really fascinated by that, and it's something that I think I've noticed with Volpe, but I could also just be sitting on my couch like making something up. So, you know, I'll acknowledge that I could be totally wrong about it. But yeah, the offense as a whole, I think it's a slugging issue. But it just feels like now they're just like a mess. Like everything about them is just, it's just not even slugging. Like I don't even feel like they're having like those grindy at bats anymore. It just feels like, I don't know if the league is starting to adjust to what they're doing, and maybe they're just throwing more strikes and challenging the Yankees a little bit more. You know, it's always a game of adjustments. But it feels over the last couple of days that they're not even really grinding at bats, because they're not even, it feels like they're not having innings where there's a lot of traffic and that somebody just didn't get a big hit. It just feels like a couple pitches here and there in their bat, somebody's out. Then the next at bat, a couple pitches here and there, the guy's out, or he strikes out on like three or four pitches. It doesn't feel like the thing that we've been complimenting them on to start the season is happening right now as well. It just feels like you're starting to get into like that press mode for everybody. And it just feels like they're all out of whack together outside of Soto. I don't know. Is that the same impression that you have?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think, you know, a lot of the issues, honestly, can be pointed towards Judge not being the Judge that we've expected him to be. Right. Like he has a 101 WRC plus, which means he's 1% better than the major league average. Like just picture Soto being like this crazy so far offensively and Judge also being, you know, his usual self. I think a lot of the problems offensively could be masked if both those guys together were going off, and they're just not right now. And then when you combine that with guys like Gleyber struggling, guys like Anthony Rizzo, I just mentioned Volpe. He's in a really bad funk right now. Ultimately, if three of those guys were playing at their usual levels, a lot of the problems that we're talking about offensively just wouldn't be there. So I do think that like when, you know, there's a larger sample size at play, I don't think Gleyber is going to be, you know, this bad for the whole year. I do have concerns about Rizzo just coming off of what he had last year, and Judge, we've talked about it a couple times now on previous episodes, but just like looking at Judge's profile, like there's nothing that's like super alarming. I think he's just like not squaring up the baseball as well as he usually does. Like he's not whiffing more than usual. Like, he's always been a high whiff guy, but it's not, he's not swinging and missing more this year. He's still getting his walks. I think for him, it might just be a timing issue. I asked him, I believe after Sunday's game, you know, if he was fine mechanically, and I don't think he would say anyways if he felt off mechanically, but, you know, he said he's fine. And again, I've said it before and I'll continue saying it. As long as Judge is healthy, I think he's going to be fine. And if Judge is healthy, the offense is going to be fine. I'm not saying it's going to be, you know, the 1927 Yankees, but they should be better than what they are right now.
I maintain that they'll be one of the best offenses in the league when they get going. And there's a sentiment floating around that I want to address, the whole, this is the 2023 Yankees offense, but they just added Juan Soto. I mean, that's ridiculous. I understand what's going on. I understand they're not playing well. But even the Yankees 2023 offense had Gleyber Torres having a very good year. It had, outside of his injury, Aaron Judge having another great year. That's not happening right now. So even trying to make that comparison is a waste of time and inaccurate, because their two best hitters are probably two of their worst hitters right now. And there is no way that you can tell me or convince me that Aaron Judge has forgotten how to hit at an elite level, and that Gleyber Torres at 26 or 27, whatever age he is, has also forgotten how to hit. So I think we're just watching an extreme team-wide slump that happens. It's terrible to watch. It's frustrating. It's inconsistent. They should be criticized. People are more than justified and validated in criticizing them. Nobody's debating that. It's all fair, and I think that it's all worthwhile. In the same turn, to make this a grander statement and comparing it to a very bad offense that was bad because they had bad players more than they had good players feels egregious to me, especially when the two best hitters from last year are two of the worst hitters this year at the beginning of the season. So I think that there does need to be some patience when it comes to some of their better hitters. I strongly believe that Aaron Judge and Gleyber Torres will turn it around and produce really good seasons. And then you still have Juan Soto. Volpe's not playing or hitting well right now, but he's still better than he was last year, in my opinion. And you're getting contributions from people like Alex Verdugo, who you didn't have a left fielder last year, and Cabrera's playing well. And DJ LeMahieu is going to be back soon, so maybe he can contribute as well. So I know that, like, in the Yankee universe, people like to say these grand statements and embellish a little bit. I do the same thing. But I do think that there should be some patience and grace when it comes to some of these players in comparing them to a team that very clearly was flawed. I think it's apples to oranges when we look at these two lineups.
100%. I agree with you. I mean, I think they should be better than 2023.
They should be. Yes.
They should be. Yeah. Not saying they will, because obviously they have to go out and perform, but they should be better.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, after this break, we'll get to some of your mailbag questions. We always look forward to that. And we'll jump into it after this break. And we're back. It's mailbag time. So we got a bunch of questions this week. We're always appreciative. Thank you for engaging with us. And because we have a couple, I think we have four or five that we're going to go through, we're not going to spend too much time, so we give everybody a chance to have their questions answered with some depth. So I'm going to pull up the questions now. The first one is from Joshua Finchler. Hey, guys. The catcher position has been defense first for the Yankees more often than not in recent memory. but Wells has shown a bit of a departure for that with who we perceive him to be. With this said, both catchers, including Trevi, aren't doing too hot against the run right now. Trevi's arm looks a bit shot even. Do we think this will signal a change either in the approach they take or our team's personnel? It's still April, and I'm not worried yet, but hard to ignore it. What do you think about? We haven't really talked about the catchers, but what do you think about where they've been at?
Yeah, it hasn't been good. You know, Trevino right now is second to last in pop time, 2.05 seconds. Out of 36 catchers, Austin Wells ranks 27th in pop time. And then for throwing, Trevino, yeah, I mean, Josh is right. Like, his arm doesn't look great. He's dead last in arm strength right now, 70.9 miles per hour. The next closest is Yan Gomes at 72. And Austin Wells doesn't have a strong arm either. He's 36 out of 51 catchers, 77.7 miles per hour. It's certainly a problem, and I think you know, the Rays obviously were trying to take advantage of that. I think they had like 7 stolen bases in this past weekend. Certainly a problem. I don't know if like they're going to address it anytime soon, because like these are the two guys they're rolling with. I really don't know what to say about it other than you hope it gets better, but I really don't think it will. Even like going back a couple years before Trevino had his wrist surgery, so in 2022, he also still had a weaker arm than the average catcher. This isn't like a new thing. You know, I've seen some people say like it must be his wrist, you know, an effect for having wrist surgery. He just doesn't have a strong arm. And obviously Austin Wells, one of the biggest knocks on him coming up was he also has a weak arm. And, you know, he's thrown out 0 runners so far this year. I think Trevino, like if we're talking about like true stolen base attempts where it's not, you know, a hit and run with Justin Turner, that was one of the stolen base outs that Trevino got. It wasn't like a double steal. That was one of the Trevino caught stealings that he had. It's definitely a problem, and they might run into this later on, especially, you know, in the playoffs, if they face a team that's quick, you know, guy gets on first, you know, it's looking like it's an automatic double at this point. So it's something that definitely needs to be fixed, but I don't know how they fix it.
I have no idea how they fix it. And it's definitely a problem that's going to reveal itself throughout the season, I think. I mean, Vladimir Guerrero was trying to run on him. So I think that pretty much lets you know what the league thinks of their catchers. But I'm with you. I don't know how that gets addressed. I mean, they're not going to bring in a third catcher, and they're not going to replace those guys unless they just lose total faith in Wells, which I don't see happening.
No, no chance.
Yeah. So
and they had Ben Rortvedt in spring training, and he has a strong arm, but obviously they moved on from him. So I think they're rolling with these two guys unless one of them gets hurt.
Right. And I think there are some things that bother or are a concern for fans and maybe the media. And sometimes teams just say, OK, we'll deal with it. It is what it is. That comes with the package, and they, you know, they kind of grit their teeth and bear it. I think this is one of those situations. Next question from Gail Fine. I know Boone did not want to answer it yesterday. Too hypothetical for him, yesterday being Sunday. But if all goes well and no setbacks or other player injuries, what do you think they will and what should they do in terms of rotation for who plays, who sits, etc.?
I believe she was talking about DJ LeMahieu when she sent this question, because he was asked the hypothetical, if DJ comes back, what does that mean for Oswaldo Cabrera? And he didn't want to answer the question. I think his actual answer was like, you're talking about a week away? You know, there's plenty of time. Yeah, so he doesn't like hypothetical questions. But when LeMahieu comes back, and let's say Cabrera is still hitting well, you can't take Cabrera out of the lineup. And we saw that earlier in the year when they were going to play John Birdie and Cabrera was hot, and they didn't take Cabrera out of the lineup. So I feel like they'll do the same thing here with Cabrera. there are plenty of ways to get DJ LeMahieu ample playing time. You know, when they signed him initially, he was thought of as, you know, a rover type of player. They could easily do that here. He can play third base. He can play first base, you know, if they wanted to, which we've cautioned against them, you know, play him second base. I wouldn't do that. But there's a way to get everybody playing time. You know, Cabrera plays everywhere on the field. So, you know, you can still have his bat in the order. You know, he can play left field. He can play right field, first, second, short, third, whatever. Like, I think there are ways to get him the at-bats that he obviously deserves. With DJ, he should just play the corners. So even if, you know, they want to move LeMahieu or Cabrera around, I think there's ways to do it. You can give Rizzo a day off. You can give Verdugo a day off, whatever it might be. So with all these questions, I usually say it normally sorts itself out.
I agree. I think you covered it. I also think Rizzo might be seeing some rest days with LeMahieu coming back. I mean, everybody.
There's no first baseman to back up for him right now. Cabrera is the first baseman. Like, he doesn't play first base, really.
Yeah.
But when LeMahieu's back, I certainly agree with you that rest days are coming for Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah, I mean, people keep talking about Torres sitting. I mean, and that's fine. I mean, I'm not arguing that one way or the other, but Rizzo also needs a day off or two. I mean, he's somebody that I keep saying it. He's playing in slow motion. He's playing at a different gear than everybody else on the field. And I don't think that's changed so far. So, okay. Abby Burkholder. I hope I'm pronouncing this right. Muja B on social media on Twitter. She sent the link, but I didn't have time to go through all that. So if I messed it up, I apologize. But Abby Burkholder, first time, long time. Thank you for supporting us. Will the bullpen improve this season? The person getting paid the most is R3 Clay Holmes at $6 million. Everyone else is basically bargain guys, and the Yankees are already well into the increased surcharge thresholds. Obviously, everyone is going to be taxed for more innings since Cole, Loaisiga, Trevino, Canley, F. Ross are down. That's a lot of names. But I just don't know what will be done before the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it in several games now. The bullpen is a problem. I know the Yankees are saying otherwise, but anybody who's watching the games will realize that it's a problem. You know, people were calling for Ian Hamilton to be the closer. I don't think Hamilton has had a clean outing in like his last six appearances. And even in today's game, he gets the bases loaded. He works out of the jam. But he hasn't looked crisp, in my opinion. Even Clay Holmes, like, he has an ERA of zero, but, you know, it's rare that he has like a clean outing. I still think he's good. But, you know, outside of those two guys, like, who are your go-to guys? I don't think they have one, really.
No.
You know, I think they look at Victor Gonzalez in that light. Okay, I guess. You know, he gave up a two-run homer. But outside of that, he's been fine. But he should be like a lower leverage type of arm. But right now he's a high leverage arm. I think the saying on Twitter is usually when a guy comes back around the trade deadline, you know, it's like making a free trade. That's what Brian Cashman says. I think he might say that honestly this year with Scott Efros and Lucherino coming back around the trade deadline, or maybe a little before that. And Tommy Canley should be back sometime mid-May to later May. You know, if he comes back, that's a high leverage arm, but he can never be trusted just with his health. He's always injured. So it's definitely a problem. We've talked about it before. They need to address it. But I think they're also looking at it as it's April 22nd and it'll sort itself out when it's necessary. I know it's probably not the best answer, but that's really how they're looking at it right now. It's April 22nd. You know, guys like Dennis Santana, You know, Caleb Ferguson, who hasn't been good. They're probably looking at it as, okay, like this is information that we can use for when we have to submit our postseason roster. And if these guys don't perform, they won't be around for October. But they have to also figure out before then, like who actually is a part of the bullpen come that time.
I don't think they have many options to sort through right now. It's another situation where I think that, you know, like what we said with the catchers and their throwing, you're just going to have to grit your teeth and bear it and go. You're going to have to really go game by game. I mean, Gary Phillips spoke to Matt Blake with the Daily. Gary Phillips on the New York Daily News spoke with Matt Blake, and there was a quote that Blake gave that was concerning to me. And if you've been listening to the podcast, you know how much we've talked about the lack of swing and miss. And even Blake said, you know, that will get better as the season goes on, but I'm not sure that this is a group of high K percentage to begin with. I'm paraphrasing. And to me, that's not what you want to hear from a really good pitching coach. And it essentially tells us that at some point they're going to have to go in the marketplace and get guys that can strike people out.
The answer is probably Luis Gil. He will probably move to the bullpen when Gerrit Cole comes back. And then you do have a strikeout guy who can go multiple innings, because obviously by then he's going to be built up. So I do think that for the Yankees, that could also, you know, be something that they're looking towards in the future, because as we've spoken about before, heel stuff is completely nasty. He is unhittable. No one has been able to hit him yet. So if you put him in the bullpen in a multi-inning role, you know, similar to what they did with Michael King, then we're talking about a legitimate bullpen arm to get you to be the bridge to Clay Holmes in the ninth.
That's a good point. And yeah, I mean, I think that might happen out of necessity. We spoke about it before. I'd rather him be a starter, but the way things might shake out when Cole gets back and where the bullpen's at, you know, for this year, he might be more effective out of the bullpen for what they need. So that's one to definitely keep an eye on as we move forward. So last question from Jenny Fry. We're going way down the road here, but that's okay, because we're talking about Juan Soto. Jenny's a diehard Yankees fan who lives in Texas. She wants to know about Soto. What do you think his contract is going to look like next offseason? He already turned down 14, 440. My guess is 15, 530. Do you realistically see the Yankees as a suitor? We know Hal doesn't like to be over the luxury tax threshold, and he already balked at giving Yamamoto more money than Cole. Do you think he'll balk at giving a position player more money than Judge?
No, I don't think he'll balk at giving more money than Judge, because, you know, Judge is under contract for 9 years. There's going to be a player down the road who's going to get more money than Judge. And, you know, salaries always go up. So they can't just, you know, sit around for 9 years and not give a position player more money than Judge, because guess what? They're not going to sign any good players if they decide to do that. So I wouldn't necessarily say that Judge's contract would be prohibitive of signing Soto. I also wrote in my story about Soto on Friday that, you know, if this continues and he's just amazing and an MVP candidate, and let's say he does win the American League MVP, and it's also kind of there right now, but we talked about at the beginning of this episode, like the fan base has just taken toward him and gravitated toward him. And I think it's already at that point where, like it was in 2022, if the Yankees didn't sign Aaron Judge, the fan base would have revolted. If the Yankees don't sign Juan Soto, the fan base will revolt, especially if it's just because of money. Now, Juan Soto could decide that he doesn't want to play for the Yankees, and that's, you know, that's totally up to him. He's a free agent. He's earned the right to play for any team. If he wants to play for the Colorado Rockies, he has every right to. But if it's for money purposes only, and, you know, let's say the New York Mets offer more money, the fan base will revolt. I think it's already reached that point. So yeah. I think the Yankees will certainly be suitors. They'll certainly try. But it's free agency. It's very hard to predict. You know, he's only 23 games into his tenure now. I think everything is going well. He seems to be enjoying the clubhouse. Just talking with him. I've talked with Soto now several times. Like, I can tell, like, genuinely, he has an affinity for playing for the Yankees right now. That's not to say that he's going to end up signing with the Yankees, because, you know, we're still months away from that even, you know, being a conversation. But right now, you know, I think for him, he's certainly trending toward making himself a boatload of money. I think, you know, everyone wants to point toward Shohei Ohtani's contract, the $700 million. The $700 million is kind of a fake number anyway. Like, if we're talking about it from luxury tax standpoint, yeah, he's making like $46 million a year. Soto doesn't pitch, obviously, but, you know, he's 25 years old. He has proven himself to be a generational talent. He's been doing this since he's 19. He has a World Series championship. If he goes out and wins the MVP this year, it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility that he's getting $50 million per year for the rest of his, you know, his time in Major League Baseball. You know, for him being 25, he'll next season he'll start at 26. Could he get a 14-year deal at $50 million per season? I wouldn't say it's crazy, because you just don't see players like him come available at this age and already this accomplished. So it's going to be an interesting free agency, just because of the fact that because of where the salary is at right now, there's already about 25 teams you could just cross off because they're just not going to go there salary wise. So the Yankees, by that measure, will certainly be one of the teams that are in the mix at the end.
I think if Juan Soto wants to be a Yankee, they'll figure it out.
I agree. I mean, I agree. You have to worry about the Mets, though. You know, I know fans don't want to hear it, but his agent is Scott Boras. You sign with Scott Boras as a player because you know Scott, usually, outside of this past offseason, but usually Scott will get you the most money. You sign with Scott because, you know, money is very important to you, and that's usually what's going to win in the end. So you cannot discount the Mets. I know every Yankee fan wants to talk about the lack of success the Mets have had, but if Steve Cohen wants to drop $700 million on Soto's head, he has the bag to do so. So that can't be discounted.
No, I'm with you. I mean, I don't discount the Mets. I don't discount Toronto. I mean, I think people will pursue him, but that's what I'm saying. If Soto wants to be a Yankee, the Yankees will figure it out, because they won't tell us this publicly, but they knew where this was going. And I think Ohtani's number just gives them more of a benchmark that they're going to have to approach. And they have a whole year to be prepared to do that. But when they acquired him, I know Cashman said, you know, it's 1 year and blah, 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 all that like lip service. But Cashman and Howe and the Yankees are very aware of where this number was going to potentially head. And you don't just acquire him without making the attempt and then act like you don't know that that's where the number is going. So I think if he wants to be here, I believe the Yankees will figure out a number that makes sense where he's extremely wealthy for generations to come for the Soto family, and that he's one of the faces of the organization. I mean, I just think I have no problem being in the minority saying that the Yankees will sign the big fish that they want. They have a long history of it. They can do it. I just think the caveat is don't expect any other moves from them once they sign Soto. Like, I just think it's a Gerrit Cole situation where you signed a big guy, it's a tremendous amount of money, and then they say, that's it, pencils down. We're not going to bring Glaber back. We might not bring Clay Holmes back. Like, some people are going to be sacrificed, and we're not really going to be doing that much more in the market. I think that's been the MO for the last couple of years when they do decide to spend big. I feel like Judge and Rodon was a bit of an outlier in a way, and Rodon has not lived up to that billing so far. So I think Soto comes back, but I wouldn't expect much more beyond that.
Well, I think they do have about $90-ish million coming off the books next year. So they could, you know, theoretically sign Soto to, you know, let's just say $50 million per year and still have enough money to bring back Gleyber Torres, who's a free agent, and even Clay Holmes, who has established himself as one of the better closers in the game. So they do have the money, but I tend to agree with you. They're over $300 million in payroll this year, and I'm sure that is causing an extreme amount of agita for Hal Steinbrenner. Because, you know, the $300 million mark has been something that he has said on numerous occasions now, how he doesn't want to cross and how he doesn't believe that a team needs a $300 million payroll to win a World Series. I tend to agree with him. But just because of how the roster is constructed, they kind of had to go over the $300 million mark to field a team that is actually a World Series contender. So it wouldn't shock me if, you know, they sign Soto and like I said, they have a lot of money coming off the books and don't fill that space with quality, pricey free agents or trades, just because of the fact that the Yankees have shown a tendency that, you know, they'll get the payroll to a number and then they'll drop it a little bit. So don't be surprised if that happens as well.
Yeah, I mean, they could have $200 million coming off that payroll next year. I think once they sign Soto, they're just going to be like, ah, we gave you Soto. That's it. You know, we'll let these other guys walk. I just don't think they'll spend 50 of that 90 available money, 50 of that $90 million that's available, and then say, okay, well, we'll spend another 35 and give us some wiggle room. I'm just kind of, you know, we're all playing a game here. As you said, it's way down the road, but I just don't see them spending that much money on Soto and then like spending even more money after that. Maybe Holmes, because they might not really have a choice. But I don't see somebody like, and I want him to come back, but like I have a hard time seeing Glaber coming back if they have to give Soto like an Ohtani-esque contract.
Yeah, if Soto comes back, I would be stunned if Glaber also comes back because of all the reasons we're saying right now. I would be very surprised if Glaber was back if they end up signing Soto to a mega deal.
I agree. So thank you for your questions. We appreciate it. Gave us some good things to talk about, especially on Juan Soto's generational contract that will be coming in a couple months, whether it's from the Yankees, the Mets, or the John Heyman mystery team. So we'll find out as the season goes on and when we head into the offseason. But thank you for listening to the podcast. This is episode 7. We're already 7 episodes in. That's pretty crazy. Time is flying already.
Make sure you tell a friend if you're a Yankee fan out there. Tell your friends to listen. Tell them to subscribe. Tell them to subscribe to The Athletic as well, because that supports me.
Yeah, subscribe to The Athletic. Subscribe to The Athletic and help Chris out. He has a lot of great work up on there. Any final thoughts? Are you a Knicks fan?
I am a Knicks fan.
Man, are you excited about your Knicks?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's encouraging that they won game one. Jalen Brunson doesn't really play well, and they sneak out a game one victory. I think that bodes well for the rest of the series. I don't think they're going to win the title. You know, it's going to be hard to get past Boston. – But getting to the conference finals as a Knicks fan, my God, like I haven't been alive for that.
Well, I hate the Knicks. I will always hate the Knicks.
Well, you're a Bulls fan, and the Bulls are trash. And they've been trash since Jordan left.
Well, no. We had the Derrick Rose years
before. Oh, yes. I forgot about that. Yes.
As you should at this point. I mean, there's the Bulls are terrible. There's nothing you can say to me. I say way worse things about them. So, yes, I totally agree. They're trash. I'm not even...
They act like a small market team. And, I mean, Jerry Reinsdorf, who owns the Bulls and the White Sox, is certainly one of the worst owners in sports. He operates both of those teams like they are living in small town Illinois. I don't get it. It makes no sense. They're the third biggest market behind New York and Los Angeles, and Jerry Reinsdorf acts like he has no money. It makes no sense.
Don't even get me started. I'm trying to like calm down because this podcast will last another 3 hours to talk about Jerry Reinsdorf and that front office. They're all trash. I feel that way about the Bulls organization, not the team or the players or the coaches, like how I feel about umpires. Like they're the same level of me. It's ridiculous. It's disrespectful to all the fans who still pay money to go there and to watch the games. It's ridiculous. Well, I hope for the listeners the Knicks do well. I will say that. Because I know that you guys have been starving for a good basketball team. So I will put out this olive branch. I hope that your team has a nice run so you guys and gals can be happy about your Knicks. I'm happy about the Rangers. And I think the Rangers are going to go deep into the playoffs. So a lot of good things going on in New York sports. The Rangers, the Knicks, the Yankees are 15-8. Let's not forget that. There's a lot of stuff going on, but the team is good. They're off to a great start. Let's keep that in perspective. The Views from 314 Feet podcast is available to all of you. So that's also another good thing. Please subscribe. We're on all your favorite podcast platforms. We're also on YouTube if you want to see the video version. And we're very appreciative of all the support. So with that said, thank you for listening to the podcast. We will be back soon. We'll see if we'll have a second episode this week. We'll have to talk and figure out schedules. But thank you for listening to the podcast, and we will speak to you soon.